This is an interview for Innovations for Successful Societies, and we are here with the Commissioner of the Environment of Lagos State in Nigeria. Yeah. Can you confirm for us that you are voluntarily agreeing to this interview?
Yes, I confirm that I'm voluntarily giving the interview.
Great.
My name is Dr. Moise Banere, the Honorable Commissioner for the Environment, Lagos State, Nigeria.
Great. So our program has begun a series of conversations with former heads of state, ministers, governors, who have led efforts to build government institutions and to rebuild government institutions in difficult circumstances in many countries around the world. And the series is about the challenges to building political coalitions and building popular support for reform and getting how to get reform done. So the purpose is to help leaders, new leaders in other countries, to think carefully and creatively about how to begin the process of reform, governance reform, and getting services working for people again. So it's most helpful if the conversation is very detailed, operationally detailed, about the steps you took and the story of the reform efforts in your agency. Could you, to start out, could you briefly tell us a little bit of background about how you became the commissioner and what you're doing for the couple of years before that?
Yes, actually prior to my appointment as commissioner, I was teaching law at the University of Lagos in Nigeria and also practicing law as a practitioner. It's then that I became a commissioner in 1999. I was briefly a commissioner for special duties in the governor's office then. Then not quite long after that, I became the commissioner for the transportation in the state. In 2007, then I became the commissioner for the environment, the post for which I presently occupy.
Okay. Thinking about the reform efforts that you have initiated as both transportation minister and environment minister, what would you say are the most important in terms of getting services delivered to people and or in terms of sort of widening the opening for more reforms?
Well, the most important I would say is information, enlightenment. Mm. You see, in our own atmosphere here, you discover that so many wrongs are done all over the whole place that are the result of ignorance. So one fundamental thing that I felt strongly that we needed to address was that of enlightening the people on the rules, if you can put it that way, rules of the game. So say, these are it. And again, I also discovered that it's very important that you let them know where there exist alternatives for them. And I give you an example. You ask people not to defecate or urinate in public places, then you must be able to point to them that this is an alternative for you if you are pressed. Otherwise, it will be meaningless to start asking them to change that particular habit. If you are saying, please stop trading on the street, then you must be able to say in the alternative that this is the right place to be and why you should be there. I think these are very important things for you to look at. And I think that's part of it. That's why I would say, first and foremost, the first thing you need to do is information, how to get the people enlightened about your programs of reform.
What are some of the programs that you have begun, perhaps starting with as transportation minister?
Well, so many reform. For example, when I was commissioner for special duties, we used to have a situation where most of the court exhibits littered the court surrounding. In fact, that day were judges able to pass to their chambers without trying to squeeze themselves in between court exhibits. So the first thing I did there was to say that we've got to say no more to this. The court environment must be decent enough and conducive, not only for the judges and the other staff there, for all of the practitioners and litigants also. So there is a need for us. Again, apart from that, then some exhibits were getting missing along the line. So that we needed to create a warehouse independent of where the courts are located, where these materials could be taken to and properly tagged, detailed, and recorded and traced. So, of course, by the time the explanation got to most of them, too, they bought into the idea, and that was when we were able to evacuate all those stuff to another place entirely, and we kept them there since that period. So in transportation, for example, I came into meet the association where, because of traffic congestion in this state, we were losing, according to World Bank, about 42 billion naira to traffic jam. Mm. So I felt strongly that there was need for us to do something as a matter of urgency. Then one of the very first things, like I said, that we did was to start educating the people on the traffic laws, the traffic rules. Then, of course, after that, I felt that, of course, just like it said in the Bible, out of every 12 people, you find a Judas. So for that Judas, you need to find somebody who will cage that person from being a deviant. So what I did was to put in an institution that is still existing today. We call it Lagos State Traffic Management Authority. They are the enforcers of the law, of the traffic rules and regulation. So again, people were able to look into those areas. And we then concluded that, again, for anybody that does not abide by the rules and regulation that we have set for ourselves as a people, then that person becomes a deviant. And to me, it will appear to me that something must be wrong somewhere. So the first thing we were doing there, particularly if you drive against the traffic, against oncoming traffic, was to send you to psychiatric home to be examined first and foremost, to be sure that you are okay or normal.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you won't find a normal person on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
So I put in that there, and that assisted greatly then. Because the number of people driving against, the statistic dropped substantially immediately, because people were not so much afraid of paying fine, but they were much afraid of being sent to psychiatric hospital for evaluation.
Yeah.
So it worked to a large extent. So that was one of the things that I was able to put in place during that period then. Of course, we have some other ones. So many other reasons. For example, motor vehicle administration too. We did a lot there too, because we had a situation where then for you to even register your new vehicle was an Achillean task. Then we had to now set up a whole factory for the production of the number plates, and that made it available, brought in surplus for everybody, and also eliminated the era of extortion that was going on because of the dead scarcity that was going on there. Then beyond that, again, in environment, for example, so much had been on also. For example, we find a situation where you discover that when we came in, we had more than enough, what I would call enough confusion in that area. You find a situation where more or less everything goes. And there was a need to put sanity into it. So, of course, like I said, the point of call was to get my people together to say, look, we need to bestow on ourselves an environmentally healthy society. And how do you arrive at that destination? What would it do for us if you do so? We need to all know that if you have an environmentally friendly society, then our income will be much safer, because then we spend less on hospital bills. Our productivity goes higher than that it was before. So a lot of enlightenment was brought into them first. Then we now say, how do we get to our destination? Then we say, okay, these are the rules now. These are the milestones. First and foremost, we must all agree to say that our refuse, for example, must be given to the proper authority for collection and transfer to the right place. No more dumping of refuse on the road. No more dumping of refuse in the drains. Because then, again, we have to enlighten them to say that they are used to this perception that once it rains, the storm water carries the refuse from one point and goes and throws it at the appropriate place. But that's not true. It clogs the thing. And you now have a flooded situation, and some of them lose their property, they lose their life in the process. So all this information we brought to that doorstep. So as a result of that, it was much easier for us then to say, this is the way to go in terms of refuse disposal.
This is the environment minister now.
Yes.
Yes.
This is the way to go. These are the people to give your refuse to. And those ones who they know where the dump site, the ultimate place to bring the refuse. And now we are at a stage to say that we are collecting over 85% of our refuse to the final dump site now. That's why today what we are thinking and working on now is how to start recycling as much as possible of those waste. And again, we also discovered that, look, gone were just days that we used to have green all over our state, that there is a need for us to return the green for several reasons. Again, in an economy of this nature, you find people quite naturally resistant to such ideas for the singular reason to say that, look, our standard of living is not yet up to what we want, and you are telling me that the next thing is to be planting trees and green all over. It's senseless to me.
Yeah.
So you need to now go in and say, come, let me explain to you. These trees is going to save you and improve your standard of living for you. How does it do so? It will create employment for some people, because we have more florists today. We have a lot of horticulturists today. We have so many people in the supply chain, some supplying interlocking paving stone, some supplying iron rod, some wetting those flowers every day. Because those ones are engaged now, the security has gone up, improved. Mm. So you can now sleep well, you can relax well, you can walk around the street well. That's number one. Your life is safe. Your property is not that threatened again. We have succeeded in creating employment and empowerment for a lot of people in the process. We are also saying that because all the open space that used to serve as haven for the miscreant, we have now reclaimed them properly through this beautification program, that those people have no hiding place again. So they can't not constitute danger to you again. Mm. They can't unleash danger on you. So again, we let them know also that even in the process also, we are fighting the global warming problem. And by so fighting the global warming problem, if you recognize the fact that we are a coastal state, we are vulnerable to flooding as a result of climate change. So the more of these trees that we bring around, the better for us, so that we don't get flushed away.
Yeah.
Again, the more of these trees, they will serve as windbreakers for us. Because when it's windy, some of their roots are thrown off. So, but when you have several trees, it weakens the intensity of the storm coming, that we need to put this thing there to save ourselves. And again, in some rural areas, those one, for example, during the tree planting, we call them and say, look, no more cutting out trees. You have to plant more. They ask you, are you going to be providing me gas to cook? Do you want to pay for my kerosene? I say, no. It's not that I want to pay for all this, but I tell you, in the short run, it will appear to you that the amount of money you are spending on firewood is cheaper than that of purchasing a proper gas for cooking gas. But in the long run, it's not cheaper, because you are inhaling carbon as you are cooking with firewood. You spend more money at the hospital. Your life is shortened. You are shortening the life of others in the process. And again, at the end of the day, you are causing food crisis for yourself, because the more desertification, the lesser the arable land for planting. So by the time you explain all this to them, we didn't know the connection between all these things. So when they now know, they know that they must plant more and more. So
what was your plan to, you've been environment minister for 2 years now. What was your plan at the beginning to begin to communicate to the people what the reforms would mean for them?
Yes. In fact, that's what I'm saying, that it has always been the bedrock of our success so far.
So what kinds of...
It's a prerequisite to any program that we do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a prerequisite that we must...
Do you use meetings or do you use, like, handouts, or how do you...
Okay, the mode, yes. The mode of communication. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There are so many ways. I tell you, the most potent of all the modes is interpersonal communication. Going through the various community development associations, talking to them and explaining, like a town hall meeting. That's the most potent. And I tell you why, although right now as I'm talking to you, we are doing media campaign. If you turn to most of the TV stations, you see our campaign going on, but we know that does not reach too many people. No light for them to watch. Those who are privileged to have television or radio, they don't have light to listen to it. Most of them cannot afford newspapers. So you'll be wasting your time if you want to go by way of newspapers. So the most potent of all the modes that we've been using is the interpersonal one, talking to them at community level, organizing town hall meeting, and at times taking our vehicles to go around with public address system, telling them about what is going on, what our policies are. What the other one we just recently done now employed also because we know somehow that larger portion of our people seem to love drama. So we are producing docudramas these days to also enlighten them and distribute free of charge to them and the pupils at the school to take home. So they watch it and they transfer it. And that basically is working for us also. And of course, for the elitists, we have the website where we dump a lot of information for them to access.
And so the docudramas are taped? Or
yes, CDs.
Yeah.
Yes. So we do that also. In fact, there is a particular, one of the popular musicians too, that is trying to work with us now. We have so many of them to working with us, but there is one major one that wants to wax a whole tape on the environmental use. So that will cover them. His fans will listen to those ones and get a message in.
Which musician?
Kwan Wan. Sonny Ade did one for us too on waste management already. So we're getting King Gwasiwa in there too, because most of these people that are really environmental problems are the downtrodden people mainly, and they listen more to those people's cassettes.
So when you go out to do meetings, who goes? Do you go?
All of us, or my ministry officials, all of us. I lead. We move from one place to the other.
How large is your staff?
Well, the management, depending on where you want to look at, I think we are in totality, you should be in the neighborhood of around 75 management level.
So maybe we could go back to sort of back up to the point where you began to think about a strategic plan for the work you would do as environment minister in those first days after the election. What was the process like to come up with the plan for what you would do and what you would tackle first?
It was really challenging because you know my own background. Like I said to you, I'm not a strict environmentalist in terms of my background. I'm a lawyer, but I do know that you can use law to order a lot of things. And that has greatly assisted. Because I look at the legal framework. Do you have legal framework for this? Street trading, is there any legal framework? There is. Okay, waste management, is there any? There is. But what I found out also then in the process was that we have so many numerous legislations. Some of them conflicting, some complex, some unintelligible now. So there was a need to quickly review them, which we set up out immediately doing. And as we're doing that, I also recognize the fact that look, there is a need to take them in bits. The problem was humongous then. We couldn't have addressed all of them simultaneously. So the first area to face, because we came in during the rainy season, was flood. We had to quickly move out and to say no. Nobody must be watched away. And we thank God I haven't really recorded any in the last 2 years. Nobody was being watched off again by flood. So we set out on that. That was a major area for the first almost 8 months that I was bottling with, while pulling on the other hand slightly the greening program. Because we needed the rain also positively for that. So I was pulling that all along. I said, okay, like this. This one is like this. This one is coming up like this. So that was how we started. So we gave full attention to those two. Then after we got our ass together in those two respects, we now felt that, look, we have so many junks, illegal structures here and there all over the whole place. We need to clean up. So we started the cleanup program. And that has been progressing well also. Those ones we are chewing bit by bit. We have areas that we zone zero tolerance area, that no form of environmental nuisance must go on. So we started taking them. In fact, our ambition out of the 20 main local government we have, we said by way of ambition in our ministry, is that in the 4 years period, we will attempt to sanitize 10 of those local 20. But that is not to say that we are fully committed, because if we don't get one right, we will move. So now we are on the fourth one.
So what are the steps that you take in the sanitization? What are the things that are done?
I set up some. In those area, local government, I set up a mini office. And I put staff, enforcers, and enlightenment. A small office, if you can say so there, to look. For the enforcer, we have 100-ish. Then for the administrative people, we have about almost 20, 15, 20. So what they do is to move around street by street, looking for environmental nuisance and abating them, correcting them, and enforcing where necessary. We also put a court there for those who have violators to be taken, charged someone to the court.
So that was a new institution.
Yes. Yeah. So they are all there now. We call them zero tolerance offices. So we are on the fourth one now. Like I kept on telling the journalists in Nigeria that it's not a must that I must finish 10 in 4 years. If it's only 5 that I can do and I do it well, it's enough. And whoever takes over should move on from that. And that also we took on immediately. Now, it's after that we now realize that we need to be an active participant also in the fight against global warming. So I set up a whole department for that. And to God be the glory, I believe in the whole West Africa we are leading now in terms of the programs we have accomplished on fighting climate change. And we've done so much there that our people are largely educated now. We have climate change clubs in all our schools. They do programs from time to time. They have their own docudrama done by the people themselves. They have their own books too that they have developed. Then we convened the first international summit, I believe, in West Africa on climate change. It took place in March for 3 days. A lot of speakers from different parts of the world, they were all here assembled, and we were able to spread the gospel. And that summit was unique in the sense that it was a training the trainer summit. We gather all the people at the grassroots, the major leaders at the grassroots to be there so that they can be educated. We now mandate them to convene a smaller summit in the local dialect applicable in their areas of jurisdiction to communicate the issues of climate change. They just started that now at that level too now, educating them why they should not cut trees, why they should not burn refuse, why they should conserve energy, conserve water, all those ones now. So they are going there. They are not going in terms of complexity of ozone layer depletion and all those ones. People at the grassroots who don't know that. All you need to tell them is that if these trees come down here, then tomorrow you see serious rain that will wash off your house. You will have food crisis if grass tree does not survive. So those are the minor messages we are sending to those ones so that they will know what climate change is all about. And having done that in terms of publicity and enlightenment, now we feel stronger next year. Now we are having another major summit that will address mitigation and adaptation measures of climate change. As well as to start also informing them about the various mitigation steps or adaptation strategies to put in place towards combating climate change. So that is also therefore that we are working on. So, like I also remarked earlier, that we are the state that we are able to account mainly for our refuse generation now. So we are working also on integrated waste recycling facility so as to start. At least our ambition is to make sure that we convert or recycle not less than 80% of our waste. So we're working on that also. That's our ambition.
So when you say you're the first state to account for the refuse, is that what you said?
I said, well, of course, I can say that categorically. Yeah. In fact, in the whole West Africa, we are the first state to have a transfer loading station for refuse management.
So why do you think you have been successful where other states have not?
Passion. The leadership.
Yeah.
The team, the can-do spirit. We have developed what I consider, I always say, can-do spirit. We believe we can do everything. There's nothing that is impossible as far as we are concerned.
Yeah.
And that's the spirit we are using to forge ahead. That we can get anywhere, we can do everything.
What are the challenges to people coming in?
And I think that's one of the reform things that people must believe in. Leaders generally, people must have that conviction that you can do, you can carry out the reform. You are capable. You have to satisfy yourself.
Yeah.
Get yourself that self-confidence that I can do it. We can get there where they are. Once you are convinced that you can do it, I think the rest is history. But also, once you have the ability to carry your people along easily, let them know your destination and why we must go that way.
That's a really big challenge for a lot of new reformers who come in, changing the attitudes of their staff.
Yes.
You have a large ministry that is used to a certain way of doing things.
Yeah.
What are the strategies you use to get people on board, on working toward your goals?
I think I agree with you. It's a major challenge that we've had to use all manners of ways, incentive, force, the two moving together. We are in this met to work, you put in this met. Where you need some hard stance to get your result, you apply it.
What sort of inducements? What kind of?
For example, I give you an example. I'm going on a work visit to Dubai next week to understudy the Dubai Parks Authority. Because you know that is desert area and it blows on around the year in terms of greening. We want to understand it and see how they sustain their own. So now, I didn't say management follow me. I went for the grassroots people, the gardeners. Say, let's go. Come and see live how it should be. That's an inducement.
Yeah.
But then, apart from the fact that by the time its own perception will change. And secondly, again, we'll be able to talk to others too. To say, no, we must all work hard. Then others have hope that it will be my turn. It could be my turn next if I do my work right. So that is there. And again, now, we also encourage where we have the sustainability corporation to send some of them around the world to see what's going on there. Singapore. I took my client of climate change to Singapore. I saw Singapore and said, oh, God, I understand now why you're that passionate. I think I need to redouble my efforts. So you need to do this for them. And you need to celebrate their successes. Where they do well, commend them. Not condemn. In fact, I hardly condemn them much. Hardly. I encourage them even where they are failing. So that you still have the capacity to do better. Just go ahead. Don't worry. There's nothing wrong in making a mistake.
Yeah.
So you need all those encouragement from time to time and motivate them. But before the you see we have some of them that are hard to crack. It's those ones you apply official stance on. I give you a program of action. I need results by this also date. You fail, I give you a query. To explain why disciplinary measures should not be taken, for you to know that I'm in business and I'm not here to play. So that's the way we've been going. Then again, I also discovered that I need to also consistently enlighten them, because some of them don't even know what they're doing. An average driver, a cleaner, does not know that it's important. They don't know until you show them how important they are. I called the first ever, they said it was the first ever workshop. I convened a workshop for all the drivers. And I was there myself. I spoke to them. I said, look, you don't know how important you are. You are more important than even us. Because a lot of other people's lives are entrusted to you. So people must respect you more than they respect me. And the same manner, you must recognize yourself as a very important man in the chain of event. Same thing for the cleaners. If they don't clean this place, we can't sit down. So that motivational talks we hold regularly. They just finished one now for middle management staff. We normally have it from time to time, telling them, look, these are the expectations. This is who you are. Because at that they don't know who they are. We have to show them who they are themselves. Let them know that there's dignity in labor. And you also need to also teach them how to survive. For example, when I was meeting the drivers, I told them, I said, we give you a government vehicle to drive. If you're able to manage it well and treat the vehicle well for 4 or 5, maximum 6 years, they want to give out the vehicle, we give it first and foremost to you. So they say, take it away. Because you have preserved it well. We have derived value as a government from the usage. The rest you can take and do what you like with it. These are some of the things you need to put in place to get them to see. This is my asset. And that is the way all of them are seeing it. And in my own ministry, we also tell them every staff there is first and foremost an environmentalist. You must be concerned about the environment anywhere you are, anything you see. Don't say, I'm not the director, I'm not in that department. Anything you see that you know will endanger the environment, you must address it. And also, in the process also, you see, we got to the stage also during the last World Environment Celebration also. We brought out a scheme. I said we need to appoint some people that are sensitive to the environment and are passionate about the environment, and we appointed 2 categories of them. Some of them are environment ambassador, some are environment ambassador emeritus. We gave them the award, the tag, the plaque, and the certificate to be the face of the campaign in their various domains. And those ones are all over the place. I promised myself that every year they must get minimum of 20 people that will be decorated every year. 10 for the ambassador, some for emeritus.
These are employees or these are
They're not
people,
employees, they're people. Just citizens that will know that in one way or the other they've been impacting and have the capacity to impact positively on the environment.
When you, at the beginning of your term as commissioner, one of the challenges people have is finding the right people to, and in your staff, your senior staff perhaps, to get the job done and begin to motivate the rest of the people. How did you go about finding the right talents?
Yeah. Another difficult challenge. What I did foremost and foremost is to give everybody equal access, equal opportunity, regardless of rank. Whether you are a director or you are a lower officer, I don't care. I want to be able to give all of you assignments. And from the assignment, we now see those that are actually responsive. There are some directors that are not that responsive. And where we find that they are not responsive, we look for the junior officer underneath them that are responsive enough to give the assignment to do. So it took some time, really, understudying them.
When you came in, what were some of the talents or needs that you had for your staff to begin to help you begin to write your strategic plan and come up with the program of action?
You see, to be candid, what I found out then was that in terms of the mission, the strategy and everything there, They were largely bereft of the ideas. So it now devolves on you to now champion that aspect. To say, look, this is where we are going. We want to get to this place. This is the route I'm thinking about. What do you think? Do you think we should modify? You have better ideas? You don't have? Please, let's roll. Let's set for that. And again, one thing I see here is that among that staff, you need to benchmark, set threshold. That's very important. That look, between the first and so half year, we must get this project completed. If we don't do so, 4 years you are still on it. So that it was like an open maybe negotiation, if you can put it that way. We all sit down and say, okay, how do we go? What do we do? This is a problem. This is the my own solution. What is your own solution? Let's move.
What sort of, how do you make sure that you don't take on a project that's too large?
You don't?
Take on a project that's too large and therefore, I know, like, elephant projects that just end up like...
Yes.
How do you set feasible thresholds?
Well, again, that's a function of leadership.
Yeah.
You must know what you have capacity to deliver. You don't get unduly among us. For example, it would be stupid of me to say I want to, for example, line by way of concrete all the channels in Lagos. It's not doable. Even if we have the whole money, the capacity is not there to do so. So you must look at the crucial ones and make them priority. Say, let's face this one. We finish? Oh, good. Let's take the next layer. So it's like a pyramid, biting it bit by bit. So we is a leader that has visions and also look at his mission and prepare the roadmap and know which one to take now, which one not to take now, which one will outlive you. Quite inevitably, there are some, when you have addressed the lower one, which we consider to be low hanging fruit, you now look for the big ones.
We've talked about this a little bit, but when you came in and there were some talents that you needed, some things that you needed to get done, how did you begin to build the capacity of the staff that you did have to have the
that's
skills
I,
that you needed?
That's what I told you, that normally I was holding a very regular meeting with them, giving them ideas of the way things should be done and what we must do. I was holding it personally, then I scaled it up at the point to getting people outside to come and talk to them, then to organize a seminar, workshop, retreat.
Yeah.
So all those ones we're doing together.
Maybe we could back up and begin to talk about how you begin to think about how to get the zero tolerance program and the greening programs through. What were the discussions like at the executive meetings where this became one of the biggest priorities of the governor's term?
Yes, you know, when I got, you mean at the governor's level or at the ministry level?
At the ministry level, at the governor's level.
No, at the governor level, he himself sees around the nuisance all over the whole place and is concerned too. We are like advisors to the governor. And our own is to now take our advice to him, which is at liberty to accept or reject.
Yeah.
And of course, what I did was to get to him and to say that, look, this is what I have. From my experience, if you want to do everything simultaneously, we will fail. So, this is my program. I'm taking 10 by way of ambition. This is the way I believe I can achieve my target. And he looked at it, I said, great, good, roll out.
So when you began to think about how to get the greening program done, how to get these targeted cleanup areas, this was something that originated in the ministry with you.
Yes, you see, what was happening before was that the perception of the greening program was not at the scale we are operating now. It was just like any other program. You can plant, if you find people to help you, you can do. But in this administration, what we have done was to set the pace, to say that we will do it, show the people that this is doable, and this is how things should be, then they can join us. And they are joining now. People are joining. Everybody is joining.
Hmm. What have been some of the challenges to getting it done? You're working in local government areas. You're working with local governments. What have been some of the challenges to getting these done?
Okay, there's usually a lot of challenges. One of the very first challenges are the people, the issue of the so-called miscreants, disturbing, that were used either to extorting money from contractors. You give work to somebody, they say, you must pay me before you do that job. So we need to take a stern measure on those ones. Educate them to say, if you want to work, we create a job for you. And I tell you what, more than 60% of them shows that route. They join those contractors to deliver the projects. And they now are living a good life too, moving with contracts from one place to the other now. So that has worked for us. And of course, we also have the major challenge we've been having. We don't have any big challenge with the local government because they bought into the mission easily and to the vision. But the major challenge we have, mainly in our own regard, is usually with the issue of power. Some of the things we have wanted to deliver, say, there are so many strategic areas where we should have water fountains here today, but there is no electricity to power. So we're going to do most of them. So that's a major constraint.
How do you begin going about convincing the local governments to come on board? Was that an easy process, or do you have to go and have?
You see, we are lucky because we have the administrators of those local government belonging to the same party with us. So it was easy to convince for a meeting and tell them what the larger picture is and why they must buy into it also, and why we all work as a team.
Is this a joint program? Who provides funding? Is it jointly between Lagos State and the local
government? No.
Lagos State. And is there any involvement with the federal government?
Or is
this all the federal government?
Any what?
Involvement.
No.
No. This is only a Lagos State. Yeah.
So for the local governments, it's a pretty good deal. We provide the funds and the people. They just have to say, it'd be okay for you to come in.
No, you know, they have their own program, they have their own funding,
okay,
which they do, I believe, to complement what we are doing.
Okay.
For example, I couldn't have been able to plant 1 million trees in 2 years. So what we normally do every tree planting day, although we encourage them to constantly plant, but every tree planting day, all the local government will plant. So we only get the statistics from them. How many did you plant in your local government? Did you have any? Then add it to the one we are planting at the state level to arrive at that big figure.
Once you move on to the next local government area, do the offices that you've made in the four previous government areas, are they self-functioning? once you set them up?
No, they report to the ministry. From time to time. Yeah. Okay.
But they still exist.
They still exist.
They're still part of the... They exist there.
Yeah.
But they are semi-autonomous.
Okay.
Semi.
Okay.
They still get funding from the ministry.
Okay.
And they get other directives from the ministry.
I'm interested in how you got... it. You created this program where there were these local offices that did not exist before.
Yeah.
You've created this ministry that is nimble. Which I think is a difficult thing, to be able to redeploy itself to a new challenge in a new area it hasn't been, get staff on this new project that they are not familiar with. How did you build these new little institutions that did not exist before?
You see, like I said, it's a question of education, information, enlightenment of the operators, first and foremost. Once they know your mission and your vision, I say, now, with this, I want to challenge you to move with these people to this area and implement those things for me.
You mean the director of the office?
Yeah, the directive. These are the things I want you to do. These are the things. They're just implemented. The policies are made there.
Yeah.
At the ministry. Just go and implement.
Do you have certain directors that go to the local areas and then they do the hiring there? Or do you just take
We second people from the ministry.
Okay.
And they are staying there.
They
now.
Stay with them there. Okay. They report there.
Yeah.
They're under the control of the man.
And what about the court, the little courts that you have in these offices? How does that work with the interaction with the judiciary of Lagos?
You know, the judiciary is like they're independent.
Mm.
So what we do is that where we summon people, we go there to present our case to the judges and the magistrate. And it's where the court fees that we arrive, they find them, reprimand the tenement holders. And where we are wrong, we are damnified.
What are the judicial branches that you've set up? Are they part of your...
No, they're not part of the state administration.
Okay, they're just separate.
It's a third arm on its own.
But you have worked with the judiciary to get these little courts.
Yes, we work with them because, for example, they increase their capacity because they know that we're adding more burden to them now.
Okay.
How did you negotiate that with them?
No, like I said, we all have our lanes.
Yeah.
That's their lane.
Yeah.
To ensure justice.
But you had to convince them to bring a little court to that.
Well, all we need to do is to say that we have a program going on in this area. We suspect that we are likely to be having a lot of people that will default us. We need to arrange them before the court because we cannot judge them.
So they go to an existing court building?
No, they... For example, they have in some instances some existing court building. In some other instances, they ask us to go and provide infrastructure.
And then
they now post their personnel.
So they send their judges or
yes,
their magistrates.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we can move back to the. You spoke a little bit about the rewriting the laws that existed when you came in. What were some examples of conflicting legal structures that existed that you needed to rewrite and re?
No, you know, like I said, when I came in, there was we have so many legislation for different purposes, but I thought that they were too numerous, that we need to not only upgrade, review them, we need to bring them into a compendium-like structure. And we had to get a consultant to do that for us, although I'm a lawyer, but I knew that I couldn't have gotten the time to start reviewing one by one.
Mm.
So we had to engage some people to start looking at them and reviewing with us as their progress.
Contractors.
Contract.
Yeah. And then you had to work with the legislature to get them passed. Yeah.
Without them, we can't survive.
Right. What's an example of one of the problems that you had?
With the legislature?
Yeah.
Well, we don't really have a problem with them because...
Oh, I meant that what was an example of the legislation that you had to rewrite?
The conflicting legislation that you mentioned?
No, there are so many of them that come in from time to time. For example... We felt that the greening program we are doing must have an institutional backup so that whether we are there or not, it continues. So we decided that we must have a legislation to create an agency that is called Lagos State Parks and Garden Agency.
Hmm.
So we had to send a bill to them. It's at the final stage at the House of Assembly now. Once it passes through this final stage, now it comes to the governor for assent and becomes law to set it up. We have that one. We have the one on the waste management. We have the environmental sanitation law that says the do's and don'ts. So many legislatures like that that they've been able to sort out for us.
Do you have a good working relationship with the legislative leadership?
I must confess to you that we do, because virtually everything we do, we carry them along.
Mm.
Because we work in their various constituencies.
Yeah.
For example, if I'm going to initiate programs there, I notify the members of the Congress from those areas who will follow us to those places and ensure that they do not only supervise, they look through and monitor and assist us in the delivery of the project.
So when you're beginning to, for example, for the zero tolerance areas, that there was some legislation involved in creating those little authorities.
I don't understand.
For the judicial authorities they've created in the LGAs, did you need any legislation to carry that out?
No. Like I said, the judiciary has their own laws. They have their own laws that cover the entire state.
Yeah.
So you just wanted to create an infrastructure to
In some they have their infrastructure.
Okay.
In some they do not. In those ones, they have made record to say, look, we do not mind sending our personnel there, but you have to provide the infrastructure where they will be sitting, for example.
So do these courts, they only attend to matters that have to do with environmental?
Well, some of them squarely deal with matters relating to the environment.
Uh-huh.
There are some that does with other businesses.
Okay. So it wasn't like specifically only environmental?
No, there are some that deal squarely with environmental matters.
You didn't need any legislation to?
No, we don't need any. The legislations are there.
Yeah.
Tell me about the process for the waste management law and the reforms that you've done to the waste management.
Yeah, the we used to have communal depot before. People dump in a particular place, we go there and be using to shovel it out with trucks, bring it out. But no, we said no. During the last administration, they introduced the culture of bagging. You bag your refuse and put it somewhere, but our people were putting it on the road. So we now, during this administration again, by the time this administration came, we engaged private operators to complement our capacity and pay them monthly. But most of them were using rickety vehicles. So one of the very first thing I said to them is that, look, you want to do this business, you've got to use the right equipment, which are the refuse compactors. And I gave a deadline. And I told the managing director of the waste management authority, you've got to get these people to do so. And today I tell you, virtually all of them have complied.
Hmm.
So that's the major one we have done. And the TLS is another thing we are plotting.
What is that?
Transfer loading station.
Oh, yes.
Now, not all of them need to go to the landfill station. Again, they don't need at the transfer loading station where we transfer overnight. Yeah, now, those are some of the new innovations. There we have more sweepers now on our road. They sweep during day and evening, around the clock. Those are all over the old place also.
Were there difficulties in getting these things done? This is a pretty big change from the system that existed.
Well, there was a bit of resistance in terms of the private operator, because they said to me, for example, where do we get the fund from? We don't have the money. I said, look, get a loan.
To buy the new truck.
Get a loan. Get a loan. And we encourage a lot of people to come into the business before they know it, and they saw a lot of people rushing in. Everybody started rushing to quickly refleet.
So how did you convince them?
Pardon?
How did you get past that problem?
Like I told you, we put a deadline to it, and we threw it open. We further threw it open to everybody, and some new people were threatening to take over the business. So everybody started running for their life to say, "Let me quickly refleet before I'm thrown out."
I don't know whether this is a problem in your ministry, but in many places in West Africa, there's a problem with patronage and people that come into jobs from family ties or from group ties. Has this been a problem for you as you came into the environment ministry?
It's a,
or the transportation.
It is a problem to certain extent.
Hmm.
It's a problem to certain extent because. In as much as we want to encourage people to be engaged in any form whatsoever, we are very, very strict when it comes to your capacity to deliver. And that's where they run into issue with us. If you don't have the capacity to deliver, you can't convince us, we don't give out the job to you.
Mm.
So that, at times, if you want to be a bit sympathetic, we align you with a competent person and say, okay, join this man. You can survive under.
Yeah.
But it's generally, it's a problem of underdevelopment.
Yeah. Have you, are there successful?
Because in those days, we are just getting out of it. People used to see government as the only industry available.
Right.
It's now that we are just getting out of it, because that's why I said to you that we are creating a lot of new economies. Like, how many florists were in Lagos then? Less than about 70 something. Today, florists are in excess of 500. That's just to show you that there are new economies now. Those ones don't need to come to government.
Mm.
I know how many people I give contract of planting trees all over the whole place to.
Mm.
They've never thought about it. With 6 months intensive training now, you can become a good gardener and take up a job to say, I will be maintaining this area. You don't need to come to government.
Mm.
So new economies are coming up. Before there was none. That was why everybody thought that the only industry to survive is government.
Right.
But now, a lot of economies, we've opened up everything.
Yeah.
So people are even, I want to see, I foresee in the next few years now, people will even be reluctant taking government jobs. They say, I want to do my own job.
when you came into the transportation ministry in 99, there must have been many people in your ministry existing that had gotten there through patronage. Well, were there strategies that you used to deal with people that perhaps didn't have the capacities that you needed?
Yeah, you see, what we did there was to create some non-skilled jobs that you don't need job scarcity skill for. I say, look, this was no worry. And in some, we took some people to say, we'll give you the skill.
Mm.
Take the traffic management authority.
Mm.
We started doing serious training for those who want to be traffic officers.
Mm.
They didn't have it before, but we trained them, both internally and abroad. And some of them became skilled along the line.
Mm.
Some, for example, I took some people there. I said, look, I give you bag. You know how to ride bag? He said, yes. I give you bulb for my traffic lights. They will teach you how to change the bulb. Your own is to be going around the traffic light about 10. Once you see that a bulb is off, unscrew, put another one, go away, go to another one. So I created so many for them.
Mm.
So many like that.
So nobody was pushed out. You found something for them to do.
I managed them effectively. That was why we never had crisis. Otherwise, we have seen riots here. For example, some. I said your own job, for example, in those days, was to do monitoring of my parks, garages for me.
Mm.
Those ones that are not clean. You got to report, take photograph, and bring it back to me because I can't be everywhere.
Mm.
That's a job already for the man.
Mm.
Runs around the whole place.
Mm.
So many opportunities like that was created there.
Mm. Do you have any other advice for your counterparts in other situations coming into a job like
yes,
this?
Yes, I always tell them that, well, you see, for every person, I don't believe anybody is useless.
Yeah.
I believe you can always create responsibility for them.
Mm.
For example, right now as I'm there, there are some, because I don't want my trees or my flowers to be trampled upon, to be killed.
Mm.
I said, look, I know you have no skill at all. All that you need to do for me, from that place to that day, the trees I've planted, just be looking at them. Nobody tramples on them. Just tell them, that's your job. As a woman, I said, your own job is, rather than be taking my tanker to disrupt traffic, your own job, I put a tank here, I put water for the week, just go there, take water and wet it for me. That's your job. Take salary. So everybody can be meaningfully engaged.
Mm. Mm. That is one strategy.
Yeah.
I don't know whether this is a problem here, but one of the things we're asking people about this summer is this problem that we call brokerage, where you are selling positions in ministries, where you can pay to switch to get a better job, pay to find a job that has less responsibilities.
I don't think that's obtainable here.
Okay.
I don't think that's obtainable. You know, I tend to believe that what you want mean by that is what is called facilitation.
Hmm. Facilitation.
It's not that popular. It's not popular yet.
Not popular.
It's not popular. Mm. The only one that is possibly popular a bit is some people, they succeed. And it used to be in those days. It still might be applicable now, but it's at the very minimal level now. Is when I get a job, you get a job from the ministry now, you don't have the competence, you sell it to a competent person.
Mm.
That used to be the situation then. Mm. But right now too, because it's open competition, it's tough for you to get the job and not execute it directly. What you can do from the beginning is probably to tie yourself to a competent and say, we are a consortium, even though you know next to nothing. But you bring in a competent and say, we are a consortium. It's our company.
Reflecting on your whole time in the last 2 years working for Governor Fashola, what do you think are the rest of the keys to the successes that you've had? The last 5-6 governments have not been able to make progress?
The question is difficult to answer because of the fact that during the last administration, we had a lot of aberrations. When I mean aberration, we had a situation where we had a federal government that was largely irresponsible. Mm. Then, I give you an example. Some of the areas that we've succeeded in doing greening for today that are beautiful all over the place, then the federal government will never allow you.
Mm.
It was towards the end of our administration that I was able to do the BRT that we are doing today. We could have achieved, we started the journey of the BRT in 2003. The federal government will not allow us to use the road.
Mm.
So we had so many challenges during the last administration.
And now in the Yar'Adua administration,
so
you
far,
have better
so good, except for last week that they want to start now.
Hmm.
In the last 2 years, no problem. They've been very cooperative. But last week now, suddenly they woke up and said, look, you've got to cancel some of the local government. It's in all the newspapers. If you've been reading now, there is a face-off between us and them now. And that's how they usually start distracting you from your mission, your focus.
But so far it has been a good relationship.
Yeah.
What do you think accounts for that?
Well, I believe initially, and I still want to believe too, that man meant well in terms of saying that
President
he was seeing beyond politics.
Hmm.
Because our own position is that during the electoral campaign, you can exchange fire. But once that is over, what must be paramount to everybody is the welfare of the people, regardless of party affiliation. And we thought that it was being an elder statesman all through that period by not looking at things from the perception of party or political affiliation. But now with the new development, we are getting a bit uncomfortable. We don't know what's going to happen. What's happening
with this local government business?
Yeah.
Yeah. People have said that reformers coming in have to have a vision for what they want to see changed in their term. What has been your vision? Your big picture vision for
my big picture is to be able to transform this our state in terms of the environment to a first class city comparable to any other city in the world. I used to say by my own standard now there's nothing stopping us from ranking at par with Singapore.
Mm.
And that is what my own vision is, and I believe it's doable.
Do you have advice to other people coming in on how to build a vision and a strategy?
Yes, how we can get there, and how it can better all of us together as a people.
Hmm. One problem lots of leaders face coming into office is where to get information about other contexts, other successful strategies that people have used to get things done. Where did you get your advice and information about this? I know you said you sent people to other places, to Singapore, to see how they do things. What are some of the other...
Well, to a large extent, I would say, one, define, two, exposure. I've been widely traveled, so I've seen it all in a lot of areas, and I've seen that we have the capacity, and I think that defines your vision.
Mm.
You've been to several jurisdictions where things work, and you believe the thing must work here. There's no reason why things will not work here. So that informs your formulation of your own vision. They'll say that I want to transform my own sector too into what is obtainable in those jurisdictions where things work.
Mm.
Do you have any mentors, perhaps people who have done this before, who have advice for you on how to at least build this vision? I mean, seeing is one thing, but actually putting it to action.
You see, I have a training. I have a former training as a lawyer.
Okay.
Mm.
So you knew what to do when you came in. You saw
even
the
problems. Even if you tell me I have information, I know how to complete the information.
Mm.
Okay.
Already. And I know how to transplant.
Okay.
And how to modify. And now how to do things to modify to the extent of taking to Congress and the peculiarities of my people here. So,
are there any particular examples? I'm trying to solidify this idea of why the relationship with the federal government has been so important. Are there particular examples where they have been helpful or have not obstructed your path in the last 2 years?
Yeah, for example, in some of the areas that we're greening, the last administration of Obasanjo used to harass us over such development.
Because the people are being kicked out of the areas? Is that the complaint?
No, not because of that. Purely political.
Mm.
Purely political, because we didn't belong to the same party.
Mm.
Simple, nothing wrong than that. Mm. Nothing, no excuse, nothing. Same thing with traffic management, BRT, the bus rapid transit we are operating.
Mm.
What is the essence of a road when it's not meant for the people? You say it's my road, don't go there. Is the road not meant to improve the welfare of the people? So it's purely political.
Well, I think we have taken up an hour of your time. It sounds like you need to go. So thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
I really
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It.
It's my pleasure.